Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and we will be responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned right here and we'll be right back. Welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Excellent, thank you. You?
I am bursting.
Well, say more about that.
Well,
bursting sounds better than excellent.
It's really good.
It's right up there, huh?
I'm seeing through another duality.
Oh my goodness, can you say more about that?
Yes, I'd love to. So there's my job, which I have to do,
uh-huh.
You know, to pay the bills, and uh-huh. I don't really like it, but I have to, and then, you know, there's what I do that so that I can do this other thing, which I really like, which is the real me, which is spiritual practice.
Uh-huh.
And uh-huh. I just realized that it doesn't have to be that way.
Uh-huh.
And it's taking a more concrete form, which is really exciting for me.
And that is?
That is, well, I work in an office where students come in.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of a plain old-looking office. And I realized that I could sort of make it more inviting and interesting. And so I have this plan to put up posters and photos of inspiring people.
Uh-huh.
And it's really inspiring to me.
And some quotes and some
quotes.
That sort of thing?
Yes.
Yeah, so coming
great.
To your office is uplifting for the students.
Yes.
And
for anyone
who comes,
yeah.
Uplifting for you to be in.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I'm just bursting with energy about it. It's great.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, because conditioning, I mean, you know, I bet all of us would say that we have had those moments.
Yes.
And you kind of look back and think, how did I miss that?
Yes.
You know, how did this not occur to me until this point in my life?
Yes.
And, of course, how it doesn't occur to us is that we are distracted by a whole lot of conversation about, as you said, this, you know, I don't want to do this, but I have to do it because I have a family and I have to be responsible. And,
yes.
I'm kind of victimized by my life.
Yes.
And, And then suddenly there's this little moment of clarity, and we have this great letting go, and all these possibilities open up, and life is fun and expansive again. And
yeah,
that's great.
It's a good deal.
Yeah,
and a lot of gratitude for awareness practice.
Yeah, and you know, along with that, you could probably, if you wanted to, you know, you could even add some living compassion kinds of stuff if that doesn't feel too political.
Yes.
I just think about, you know, some of the work that's being done in Africa, some pictures of the kids and that sort of thing, you know.
Yes.
At least when I was young, and I think it's still the case, students tend to be a little idealistic and
yes.
and see possibilities where us old folks don't.
Yes.
So
yes.
That could be very good.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Sherry, we have a caller on the line, and before we get to that caller, we have some very exciting news.
What's that?
Well, I would like you to.
Full of good news today.
Why don't you start?
What is it?
Well, we have a new website.
We do. I actually haven't seen it, but I have heard the rumor.
It's really beautiful. Not that my opinion is totally unbiased.
Uh huh. Uh huh. But yeah. You like it.
I think it looks great.
Well, I know that a great deal of work has gone into it.
Yes.
And I also know that it's not quite finished yet. Is that the information you got?
Well, it's live and up there on the Internet.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I think, though, people want to be a little bit patient because I think some of it isn't just quite the way we would like it to be, but it's getting close.
Yes, yes, I would say it's getting very close.
And, you know, that's kind of true with all of us, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I feel kind of like a work in progress.
Yes.
So there, I think there will be things added and changed, some deletions and modifications before it's over. So we can all sympathize with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm excited. I'm eager to go see it.
Yeah, please check it out.
And I hope that people will go see it and that they will give us any feedback that they would feel comfortable giving us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That would be great. Mm-hmm. And there's a little contact us button there so people will know where to send their information.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Should we go to our callers?
All right.
I'd like to welcome Woodrick from England on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, it's Roderick, actually.
Roderick.
Yeah.
Close. I was close.
So how are you in the middle of the night?
It's very wet and windy, but I'm fine. I'm inside, so I'm warm.
That's always a good thing to remember, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, what's going on?
Well, I've been very interested in your work for many years, and about 10 years ago, I used to have a job. I used to fly airplanes for a living. I trained as an architect. I got involved in Buddhism.
Uh huh.
And started learning to meditate.
Uh-huh.
And what I found was a dissatisfaction with the career rat race kind of situation.
Uh-huh.
And I stopped working. And I started doing care work and fundraising and so on and so forth. But recently, about a year ago, I stopped doing that. I have this sort of strange kind of sense of not really wanting to do very much, which I find very, very difficult because I do the equivalent of living on welfare and so on and so forth. I mean, I had a very good education and so on and so forth, but there's a strange feeling of inertia and not really wanting to do anything at all. I meditate regularly. I don't take drugs. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I live quite a sort of simple life.
So let me just make sure I'm with you here. So it feels like as a result of meditating, you decided that you really didn't want to do that work any longer. And then you went into this other sort of caregiving or that sort of thing. And slowly over time, you moved into this this place where you don't feel motivated to really participate in anything.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit like that. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, I've booked a month in Spain to live in a hut on a hillside, for, you know, on my own in a solitary. I've done several of these. I'm not sure how healthy that is. It's kind of like a sense of wanting to withdraw from the world.
Yeah. You know, we have a word for that, actually, in Zen. It's called quietism.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite frowned upon.
In Zen?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those to-be-avoided places.
Really?
Because, you know, to withdraw from the world into monastic practice is one thing. Because in monastic practice, we're sort of guided and directed, and we have a role. And bottom line is, it doesn't let us just look to our ego to direct our lives.
Right.
But with quietism, we can fall into a place where it's actually egocentric karmic conditioning you know, that illusion of separation that takes over the guidance of our awareness practice. And pretty soon it has us off somewhere, just kind of really indulging it. You know, sort of getting up every day and doing whatever the voices tell us is the thing to do.
Right.
Yeah, so it can actually be extremely dangerous.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have been involved with a Buddhist group, and I've asked for ordination. So the solitary kind of work, or there is a monastic sort of element to it, in the sense that there is a monastery nearby, and I have been on retreats with this particular monastic group. For over 10 years.
Yeah, the secret.
It's not
though,
like I've been just doing it on my own, but
right.
I have got some concerns about the effect it's having on me.
Yeah, I would agree. I would be concerned. And it's not the meditation, it's not the retreating, it's not having someone besides you directing your awareness practice.
The first time I actually went on for 2 weeks, I had a very strong experience of the inner voices, you know, that sort of telling me what a terrible person I was.
Uh-huh.
And a good friend of mine said, you need to read Sherry Huber's book, There's Nothing Wrong With You.
Uh-huh.
And it was a very strong experience of somebody actually seeing what, you know, describing what was going on in my head.
Uh-huh.
In a sense, since then, I've been aware of that kind of that egocentric karmic conditioning kind of situation. And I don't know, sometimes I feel if I go on a retreat, on a solitary or something like that, it I develop some degree of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm aware of that, you know, inner egocentric conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe you're right. So you're saying one needs to be in a sort of situation where one's actually directed, or
yeah. Well, it's mostly, you know, people tend not to have too much trouble as long as the voice of ego is in charge of their life. Trouble, yes, but not nearly the difficulty a person runs into when they say, you know, I don't want to just go along with the voice of my ego any longer. I want to make a different choice for my life. And then we run up against conditioning and its desire to and its ability to take control of our lives. Now, when we are in monastic practice, monastic practice as I know it. I don't know what other people are doing, but as I know it, what happens is that we are constantly being pushed to that place of ego screaming, I don't want to do that. I don't like that. I don't feel like that. I don't want to. And it's in moving past that we find freedom.
So just me going off on my own, it's kind of, there isn't that challenge, really.
Say that again?
I can just do just me going off on my own somewhere is not really going to, it's not going to challenge
my
ego.
In fact, I don't know about where you live, but I'll tell you, in the country that I live in, it's the national dream to have enough money that you can buy your own island. And then you can just be off by yourself with, you know, servants and a lot of toys, doing whatever you want to do all the time for the rest of your life. So ego's desire to do what it wants all the time is pretty common. And it's not even so much doing what it wants as being in charge of, in this case, you doing what it wants.
Yeah.
So it's,
I mean,
really,
I do find it very difficult when I go on these solitaries. I do find it actually extremely difficult in the sense that I'm screaming to get out.
In the sense that?
I find actually that I hear what's going on in my head.
Yes.
And it's very, very painful.
Yes, it is.
And it's very unpleasant.
Yes, it is. And, again, in something like monastic practice, what happens is the teacher, whoever it is that's in that role in your life, acts as a mentor. So the voice is actually, the voices are not able to do those that beating.
Right.
Yeah. So you go off by yourself and you hear how cruel that conditioning is. And so you just, you know, it's possible to come out of an experience like that just feeling battered. But it didn't actually reinforce the authentic you. It actually reinforces ego.
Okay, understood.
So you might pop over here and visit us instead of going to Spain. I know Spain is a little closer, but, you know, we have a lot of nice sunshine and things like that, too.
Yeah, no, I'd love to come over to you, but I got serious money issues at the moment because I haven't been working for a while.
That's right. That's the other side of it, isn't it? You wind up in a place of being very limited in your choices, and that's
exactly,
you know, for everybody, that's what conditioning is doing all the time, is trying to back you into or farther into a corner, so that you have very few options. Except, in fact, no options other than doing what the voices tell you to do.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, for me, I don't know if you've been following what we've been doing, but you can visit the website and check in. You know, one of the things that I'm really pushing people about is service. And it really is for exactly what we're talking about. It's not because I think that there's something that actually needs to be done in the world. It's not that.
Mm.
It's that it takes us, service can take us beyond our devotion to ego in a way that very few things can.
Well, just before I go to Spain, I'm actually going off for 6 weeks on a fundraising, door-to-door fundraising thing. So, for poor people in India, so you know, maybe that's a part of it. But I mean, I've done it before, but it's extremely difficult going door to door asking for money.
So here's what I hope for you: take that little book. There's nothing wrong with you. Read it. Read it in the morning. Read it in the evening, and make this next 6 weeks that you're doing that. Make that a time when you are saying no thank you to the voices of self-hatred.
Okay.
They have nothing to tell you. You don't need, and it's a, you know, it's a not a situation where you have to talk to them or argue with them. You simply turn your attention away from them, come back to the breath, and remind yourself where you are and who you are and what you're doing.
Yep.
Okay? And then let us know what happened.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sherry, and thank you very much, Michael, as well.
Thank you. Good night.
All the better. Yeah. Good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Roderick. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Rich from Murphy's, California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello, Sherry. Hello, Michael.
Good evening. Now, I've heard of that Murphy's place.
Yeah, it's pretty close, I think.
It's nearby. It's very nearby, yeah. How you doing?
Well, I kind of discovered something, I guess it was Sunday. I've been involved in the practice for quite a while now, and I'm pretty active in the Sangha. And my partner and I started to get involved with something called nonviolent communication.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to be a way to communicate, you know, what we talk about, it dovetails very nicely into our practice, and it seems like they are just naturals for each other. And we had a little group over the house, and there was an exercise in And I was one of the people looking at self-judgments, and other people were looking at enemy images. And I was filling out this paper, and then we went over what I wrote down. And the facilitator said, I was talking about kind of the voice in my head who I thought was my mentor. And I was explaining how this voice talks, and she says, that voice is speaking jackal, is what we call jackal, which we call, which we would call egocentric karmic conditioning.
Uh-huh.
And it never, in all these years, it never occurred to me that what I thought was my mentor was actually self-hate that kind of abducted the mentor. And I've been speaking to myself in pretty violent ways. What nonviolent communication considers violent, in very judgmental ways.
And now, how have you been involved with our practice and managed to get away with that?
That's what, you know, and that's another level of getting beaten up again, you know. Like, somebody came in to me and says, well, what have you been doing? What have you been doing? And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I really thought that this voice, even though it was kind of tough love kind of voice, I thought it was compassionate. But then,
well, but what I'm saying to you is, you must have been colluding with that voice.
Absolutely.
To keep it secret.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I heard you say you must have been colluding with that voice. And
to keep it secret.
Yes.
Because certainly if anyone in the practice had heard you saying those things, they would have reflected that back to you.
Yeah.
In a way that would have let you see what was going on.
Yeah, I guess I just never, I have tried to sign up for another TINW class here, the one that's coming up in March. I haven't heard yet, but I tried signing up a couple weeks ago. I hope there's room. I really need it at this point. I went to one about 5 years ago, and I've been practicing, and yet I, for the life of me, I can't figure out how this happened. You know, it's sneaky.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, it's sneaky. You know, I get regularly accused of extreme language and being slightly delusional about how all of this stuff works, and it's sneaky. It doesn't even come close.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, and you know, I got pretty emotional when I finally figured out that, or actually saw that this, quote, mentor that I thought was my ally has been keeping me paralyzed with a number of projects that I've been working on, and I just, you know, it beats me up for not, it distracts me, and then it beats me up for not finishing,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not subtle at all. I'm almost embarrassed to talk about it, but I'm glad I'm talking about it because it feels wonderful to clear the air, and if anyone else is going through this, it might be helpful for them, but gosh, it really surprised me.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it took saying it out loud somewhere and having somebody hear it to really get what was going on.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, because I had thought, yeah, I'm really eagerly looking forward to your book on compassionate self-discipline, because this is a problem I've had in my life. I'm either a drill sergeant, you know, like the great Santini, the very strict, or the hedon, you know, the middle way has been the tough road for me to see.
Of course, that's not, none of that is the issue. It's interesting that you would take up something like nonviolent communication, because communication is the issue.
Mm.
It's not the nonviolent part that's the issue, it's the communication.
Oh.
Okay, so somebody, and we guess who, has talked you into keeping quiet about what goes on with you.
Yes.
So once that collusion is established, then you know, as we were saying with the previous caller,
yes,
egocentric karmic conditioning is in charge of your awareness practice.
Yes.
And so it would come up with something like tough love. Now, you have never heard anything in Buddhism about tough love.
No.
Never.
Nope.
Smacked up alongside the head, yes, but not tough love.
No.
So it's the hiding out. It's the colluding is the best word I can come up with. There's information that says you don't need to let people know what's going on with you. You don't need to talk about that. You know what you're doing. You can handle this. You're in charge. You got this. You buy into that, go along with it, and there it is. The devil's in charge of your practice.
Yes. Boy. This is a big one.
Yeah. Now, I'll just go right on ahead and say this, since we're at this juncture with this. As far as I'm concerned, of course, the only communication technique that anybody needs is reflective listening.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, if I could actually have had the awareness or whatever to say what was going on inside my head, it would have. I could have heard it.
That's right, know? Because somebody would have reflected it back to you. We hope,
mm-hmm.
and then yes, you would have heard it. You would have recognized it for what it was, and poof.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, the importance of that is it's not somebody telling you what's going on with you. It's you hearing it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, really seeing it for what it is. It's like shining a light in the darkness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, as you've noticed and pointed out, its next ploy is to say, "What is the matter with you? How could you have been fooled like this?"
Yeah,
and that's just the next stage.
Yeah, no, I saw where that was going and cut that off and just started to laugh at it and you know.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, what's the matter with you? Nothing is the matter with me. I just woke up and saw what's been going on.
Yeah.
Nothing's the matter with me. I'm fine now. I might have been a little deluded a while back, but oh, what I have seen and what I have learned. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, and the minute, you know, I identified that for what it was, I heard my parents' voices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was my voice,
mm-hmm.
and I just heard their voice. It was so obvious that was conditioning, you know. Now I see it. I mean, now it's patently clear, but...
Oh, as soon as we see it, boy, is it clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And until we do, whee! I was talking with somebody earlier today, we were laughing about that because she had just seen a huge piece of conditioning that has been there all of her life that is one of those, you know, the nose on your face kinds of moments. And we were laughing about, I wonder how many of those there are. How many times we think, well, you know, I'm onto my process. I've paid attention quite a bit. I know what's going on. And then suddenly just everything, the rug is completely pulled out from under you and you're thinking, I don't know anything. I haven't seen anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for us to learn to enjoy those moments rather than letting conditioning say that there's something wrong with us
right.
for having those.
And in the moment, I really did. I mean, I almost started to cry, and I was so happy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just there was it was like I was carrying this cross or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the burden was just lifted off me. I actually saw how somebody believed that this mentor was helpful by speaking in these judging voice all the time.
Yeah,
and it was just so clear. And I'm very grateful. And I understand that any effort to say, well, why couldn't you? How could you? That's all self-hate, and I can drop that now immediately. You know,
mm-hmm.
But it was funny to see right in the doorway, right after that realization comes in the how could you do that, you know? There's not a let-up. You can't let down for a minute.
Oh, you can't take your eyes off of it for a second. Yeah. It's really true.
Well, thank you so much.
We are always pointing out, that really is the good news. You know, you really do want to be that present in your life all the time. Why would we want a vacation from awareness?
Yeah, and I can see that it's so insidious that any kind of little crack, it's going to try to worm its way back in.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really important to just stay on guard, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a really valuable lesson, and
what a lovely Valentine's Day gift to you.
Yeah, I can't tell you how. It affects everything in my life because that self-judgment obviously projects out into work and relationship and everything else.
It's there trying to run the show. You know, it's like there's somebody standing behind you with a giant spotlight,
mm-hmm.
and it just turns it to that and says, and then it illuminates that for you so that it illuminates your relationship. And, of course, what it illuminates it for is to show you, so that you get a nice view of what's wrong with your relationship.
Mm.
Then it comes back to your work, and it illuminates everything that's wrong with your work.
Mm-hmm.
And then it, of course, magically turns that spotlight onto you, and we get a view of everything that's wrong with you.
Yep.
Yeah, then it'll go through your finances and the state of the world and all of your other relationships, and then it just starts cycling back through again.
Yeah, and that's why I could see it's so important to just realize there is nothing wrong and go from there. And there may be some things that we may want to participate in, but there's absolutely nothing wrong, and that's the reality.
including having all of this conditioning.
There's nothing wrong
with that either.
You know, the circle of it's so funny because right after it happened, I didn't hate the mentor. I didn't even hate the self-hate. I just accepted what was there.
And of course, you're saying mentor in quotes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because that certainly was not the mentor.
Yeah. That was obviously not the mentor. And that's something I'll really be developing in the next few retreats and in my daily life, is to really develop an intimate relationship with a strong mentor that can, guide me and help me, as opposed to speak evaluatively and judgmentally and violently.
And remember, if a voice is talking to you and it doesn't have anything kind to say, it has nothing to tell you.
Hmm. Yeah, that's one that I've allowed to seep in, and I've seen it now for what it is, and lived with it, and it's not pleasant.
Yeah, and that's one that you want to write on the wall, not even on a post-it. Write it directly on the wall. Yeah, because it's going to sneak back in, and it's going to do everything it can to take you back into this place, because that's a relationship that it's been nurturing for a long time.
Yep.
And it wants to keep that relationship strong.
It's very strong, but you know, now that I've seen it for what it is, there's a part of me that will always remember it, and I just have to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Just have to come back to center.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody else today. I had a lot of conversations today. And what we were talking about was that moment when you get it, that the only thing that there is to do in life is come back here.
Mm.
We don't need to think about anything, figure anything out, solve problems, come up with a better idea, fix ourselves, improve. We don't need to do anything except get here.
Yes.
Get centered, get with the breath right now, and all problems fall away. And, of course, that voice is there to get you out of the moment in any way it can.
Yeah, and I know that now on a deeper level, Sherry. I think I knew it in my head before, but in my real everyday practice, I really didn't. I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else to say. I didn't experience it.
Yeah, that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very encouraged. And
yeah.
thank both of you, and listen all the time, and it's a wonderful thing. So keep going.
All right. Happy holiday and good night.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rich. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and we're going to break now, and we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Coming up next in our second segment of today's Open Air show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and we'll be responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, that was a very inspiring call for me.
Yeah.
Talking about self-hate and putting it out there.
And how insidious it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Great. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Dr. Hammond from Pittsboro, North Carolina. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
Good, good. Hello, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Nice to be able to call across the country. I have a question concerning, I'm a veterinarian, and I often have clients ask me how they know how when the end of their animal's life is in sight, how they will know when their animal is suffering, and they ask for my guidance and when to make that decision in euthanasia when they feel like their animal is suffering. And my main two concerns are, how can we judge when an animal is suffering when it may just be in pain, and when what is my role in actually explaining that to someone or not, in helping them, guiding them with that decision and when it's time to euthanize their animal?
Uh-huh.
Differing between, I guess, how can I help people differ between pain and suffering and to make that decision that they rely on me to help them with? When, when do
you
they
know,
euthanize?
The part that always fascinates me about this is the different approach that we take to animals and people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I came in to you and said, you know, my mother is really suffering, and I want you to help me know when we should euthanize her.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very odd, wouldn't it? In fact, people get themselves really worked up about euthanizing humans.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just understood that we euthanize animals.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
Yeah. So that, to me, is the, because that's the one I find interesting. To me, that's the real question.
Uh-huh.
Who's suffering here?
Right.
You know, I don't ever believe that I have any idea about somebody else's suffering.
Right.
I know when I'm suffering. And, of course, In Zen, we tend to look at it as pain is a natural part of being in form, in a body.
Mm-hmm.
Suffering is what happens when we think there's something wrong with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't want what's happening to be happening, and so I suffer over that.
Right.
So if we were to adopt that definition, at what point would we want to kill an animal?
Right.
Because
right. Probably never, because animals are less likely to resist what's happening.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a lot of animals in what look like miserable circumstances. I'm sure you've seen thousands more. And they don't seem to have anything going on about it at all.
No, but when the rubber hits the road and I'm in the room with someone who's crying and they don't want me to explain to them the difference that this animal may be okay with this apparent pain or difficulty breathing, that the animal is accepting of that and present with that. And I mean, maybe I with certain people I could say, you know, it's possible just to allow this animal to come to its death naturally. But a lot of people are not comfortable watching that animal do that.
Right. But that's a different issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if somebody, you know, I'm responding to the question that you asked me. You know, I understand what goes on with people about it. It's what goes on with us all the time. We project from our own level of suffering onto someone else and then believe that they are having our experience.
Right.
So technically, we could say, at what point should you euthanize the owner? Okay? Because that's the one who's really suffering. Yeah?
Right.
So, you know, you want me to put you out of your misery now so that, you know, this dog can die in peace? I know that that's a slightly unorthodox approach.
Right.
But,
I see your point of view.
Yeah, sure. I think it's the important discussion because, you know, I want, as soon as I get uncomfortable, I want you to do something about this animal because I don't want to have to be with my feelings about this. Now, of course, for a lot of people, it's I don't want to be with the inconvenience. Dog's pooping on the floor.
Right.
You know, dog's ruining the carpet. You know, yeah, we love him, but come on. You know, carpets are expensive. So there can be everything from that to, you know, I just can't stand what I'm projecting onto this animal.
I know. Yeah.
And
the anxiety that's produced in the people watching this.
Yeah. And if we take that then to the human side of it, which, again, I think this is where we need to be looking at these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to me, I am going to say this, but it's not a popular thing. You know, it's time to euthanize me,
mm-hmm.
Okay, because I'm messing up the carpets. You know, it's costing way too much to keep me alive. This is a real hardship on everybody around me.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of us, it's, okay, this is the point where I am in life. Now do whatever is required to keep me alive for just as long as medical science will allow.
Right, right.
So, you know, what it comes down to is I can't help you because I think we're asking the wrong question, and I agree with you. I think almost nobody would want to have the conversation that we're having, and so it's an interesting thing with medical people. You know, in this country especially, again, I don't know in a lot of other countries, but in this country, we want somebody to make decisions for us.
You got that right.
Yeah, people want that. And, of course, it would cost you a lot of money and possibly make you unpopular if you said, I don't want the karma of this. You need to decide that. You need to take responsibility for that. If you want me to end this animal's life, then I will agree to do that. But it has to be your decision.
Right.
I don't want the karma of that.
And I think that's where most of us as veterinarians do put our foot down most of the time and say, you need to make this decision.
Yeah.
But the same truth carries over to every medical decision.
Oh,
antibiotics or wait it out or any of those little decisions.
Yes. Well,
I think we've been trained or conditioned to want those decisions to be made for us, but in the end, it's their body or their animal's body.
Yeah, and you're in the minority. I mean, an awful lot of medical people feel like they are qualified to make those decisions. And
well, let me tell you, it's faster. It's a lot faster for me to make your decision.
Oh, it's faster, it's easier. You know, if you depending on how you're going with it, it's lucrative.
Right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to me you're in the midst of a great spiritual quest here to find the place that is so for you, because since you're talking to me, you must think somewhat in these terms that there's karma in everything we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Trust me on it.
You're sure about it.
Yeah, there's right. karma in everything we do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've actually been introduced to your work recently by a friend who just moved from L.A.
Uh-huh.
But I am on a journey.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, if you think about it, you know, you don't have to get too oogum boogum about something like karma. There are effects from everything that we do, and that includes the things that we don't do.
Right.
So there is no act that stands alone in an interconnected world.
Right.
And so whether we do something or we don't do something, there are implications and ramifications.
Yeah. Well, right. Okay. I do feel I live my life with that philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just that it really is a very large issue, and one that personally, you know, would applaud your willingness to really seriously explore, rather than just going with the thing that's easy, with conventional wisdom, with what's going to make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we create a great deal of suffering in the pursuit of making people happy.
We create suffering in the pursuit of making people happy. Is that what you?
Yes. If I'm going to take on taking care of you.
Mm-hmm.
Making you happy, making your life easy.
Right.
I can create hideous suffering for you in a very short period of time, which again points us to
for yourself.
Yeah, it points us to a very large conversation that it would be that this society would be well served to have.
Mm.
Which is, what is life and what is death and what is quality of life and when is it? Time to take responsibility for saying good night, Gracie.
Yeah, that is a big conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your support of my interest in pursuing that, and I hope a lot of other people will consider that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's really
something we will consider.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's one of the greatest things to meditate upon or think about is death and dying.
Yes, and to be present to that. You know, what happens to me in that? When I am faced with this situation moment by moment, what arises in me? What do I believe? What do I think? What am I trying to protect you from? What am I trying to protect me from?
Right.
What level of inadequacy do I believe that I have that I'm now going to project onto you? Yeah, tons and tons and tons of things that go unexamined, unnoticed, unexplored, and again, that result in a great deal of suffering.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the fear of death is one thing that's led us to a lot of our problems today.
Yes. Well, and a fear of suffering.
Yeah.
You know, I kid people on a regular basis, that almost nobody in this country has ever had a headache. Nobody we know, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because at the first sign of pain, we're just scrambling to get a hold of the thing that's going to take it away from us.
Right.
Now, I don't want to feel that. I don't want to know that. I don't want to look at that. I don't want to hear about that. Don't be negative. Don't be so unpleasant, as people will say to me. Oh, you Buddhists and your suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's always something else to suffer about if you
If we want to suffer,
if you resist one thing, and you are able to ignore it, there's always the next thing you need to resist.
That's right. As long as we're willing to suffer, there's always something to suffer with.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think you said what I wanted to. I was interested that pain is not necessarily suffering in animals, and we don't know if the animal is suffering.
That is correct.
And that this euthanasia is a whole other can of worms.
Yes.
When do we do that? When do we make that decision?
Yes. And the assumption that because it's over fairly quickly for me, there are no implications for the creature.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to me.
Well.
You know, because as human beings, our conditioning tends to make us insensitive, we then project that everything else is insensitive as well. Now, people like Hindus and Buddhists as well, but Hindus are more famous for this, will say that the argument for not eating creatures is that when we eat creatures, we ingest the terror in which they died.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody who studies animals at all knows that creatures can tell when they're going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, we know what happens with us when we are in a really frightening situation, the amount of just pure adrenaline pumping through our systems, the scramble for survival that begins to take over. So, you know, folks like that would say, and that's what you are taking into your body every time you participate in that way. So, again, a great deal of looking, a great deal of exploration. And of course, for me, the exploration is the end of suffering, not the beginning or the cause of suffering. It's what we don't look at that causes our suffering, not what we face and resolve. I hear that music in the background.
Yeah.
So yeah. Keep us posted, huh?
I will. I may say this one last thing. Another veterinarian recently told a client whose patient was diagnosed with terminal cancer that there are seekers and there are acceptors, and guess who's happiest in the end?
Uh-huh.
The acceptors. And I've been rolling that one over a little bit, but I'm definitely in the seeker one. And
well, here's the deal. Acceptance without clarity is denial.
Okay.
So we don't want any, you know, we there are no shortcuts.
Yeah.
And for me, here's what it comes down to. I want to apply everything to myself first, and then I'll have an idea about somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sherry.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Sherry, we are at the end of our hour.
Isn't that good? It's been, I've enjoyed this. I think there have been some really great topics brought up and great calls, and that's why we're here, huh?
That's great. Let's do it again next week.
I'm for it.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.